You can't set a practice and expectation and letting your musicians know you are going to let go when things are not good. They are going to get it. They are going to be okay with not being good enough or not being great at all because you are allowing it. Hello, hello. Welcome back to the second week of the Conductors Podcast Summer Mini Series. In the month of July, I will be sharing some tips about different aspects of the business of being a conductor with you every week instead of our usual interview conversations. As I thought, like, summer is usually a time when I myself learn more about conducting, like study more, go to workshops, master classes, or just, you know, to stay quiet and focused for myself. During the season, it's usually really busy with studies, with work and all that. Sometimes I get so absorbed into all the basic works and forget to look about the big pictures. So I hope and invite you to join me with this journey to refresh and sharpen some of the skills, because, you know, I'm always learning as well. And as I prepare those episodes and try to organize my thoughts, think back to my experience and define what I want to share with you, I'm always learning as well. And thank you so much for being with me, sharing my journey. So the topic this week I wanted to talk about is to prep for rehearsals. This, again, is something that I learned quite some during my studies, but really learned the essence about it when I started working. Because as we all know, a lot of the things that we only get better after we make mistakes. Sometimes, you know, fatal mistakes. But that's part of the business, that's part of being human beings. And as a conductor, it's a little more difficult compared to being an instrumentalist or a vocalist, because we only really get experience when we are actually working with people. And when we are working with musicians, I hate to say that we use them for practice, but yeah, we are always practicing when we are on the spot, because we can be as prepared as much as we can. But a lot of things really only happen in a moment as compared to, you know, your violinist or your flutist will have the chance to practice their parts in practice rooms and at homes, play for recitals until they really have to perform, right? But even when we are rehearsing, we are performing to a sense. So I wanted to give you a little background about how I learned the craft of rehearsal. I've been conducting in high school. I was the student conductor for my high school string orchestra and choir. So when I started really learning about conducting during my master's degree, I already had experience rehearsing people. And also I grew up playing in orchestras. I started playing orchestra since second grade. Yeah. And I sang in choirs. I used to play piano for my mom's kids choir since I was 10. So I grew up going to ensemble rehearsals. But it's not so easy to talk about rehearsals because there are so many little things, right? It's about the moment, how you speak to your musicians. It's also about how you foresee some of the problems. It's about problem solving, and it's about planning and strategize your time and your knowledge about the score. So for today's episode, I'm going to try my best to organize this topic into a few sections. So the first part is I'm going to talk about how I plan rehearsals before getting to the spot. So I'll be talking about how I plan each single rehearsal and how I plan rehearsals throughout a concert cycle. Then I will also talk about what we do when we are on the spot in rehearsal. How do we decide what to rehearse? How do we go after some of the things that doesn't go well between rehearsals, or, like, you know, within one rehearsal? Like, so the second part of today's conversation will be focusing on the spot. So when you are already in rehearsal, you have planned everything. But once when you are on the spot, when things don't go as planned, what do we do? Or when you're on a podium, you don't know what to say, what are the things that you can do? And the third part will be really briefly is how to improve my rehearsal techniques, because we want to be always improving, right? So no matter if you are just starting or if you're experienced or if you're a great musician in other field just starting to conduct, sometimes we don't really know how to rehearse well or how we can continue to improve ourselves. So the last part, I'll be talking about some of my experiences and how I improve my rehearsal techniques. So here is how things are organized today. And I'll be starting. The first part is how to plan rehearsals. And before I start telling you how I do it, I wanted to share a story with you. So toward the end of my doctoral study, I went to Eastman for my DMA and I started to interview for jobs. And one of the mentors at Eastman told me, okay, that I should be prepared for some of the, you know, standard questions that people ask during interviews, which include, oh, you know, your recruitment strategy, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you want to do differently, your repertoire choices and rehearsal strategy. So I thought I knew how to answer the other questions except for the one rehearsal strategy, because I felt really odd. I don't know how to talk about rehearsal strategy to people. I just come in and rehearse. So I asked my teacher, Neil Barone, how do I answer this question when people ask me about my rehearsal strategy? And he looked at me confused. I still remember his look. He looked at me like really odd and say, rehearsal strategy? You go into rehearsal, you hear problems and you solve them, you fix them. That's it. That's rehearsal. You go in, find problems, and fix them. And I was laughing really hard and also crying inside, because I think we all know as conductors, we go into rehearsals and hear problems and solve them, fix them. But that's not how you answer an interview, right? By the way, we'll be talking about how to answer interviews, how to conduct good interviews later this year, when I think probably in September, when people start to interview for jobs for the next season. But yeah, it sounds straightforward. We go in, we hear problems, we fix them. But well, how do we go in and where do we start? I think that's an art. Where do you start with each rehearsal? Where do you go? And when you hear problems, how do you fix them? Right? So anyways, that's just a little story that I wanted to share with you. Now we are going to talk about how to plan rehearsals. If you haven't already, I would like to invite you to listen to episode number 19 when I talk about how to run efficient and effective rehearsals by using your voice and words well. That's a different side about rehearsal. In that episode, I was talking about technically how can you be more efficient and effective if you say things in a certain way, if you organize your thoughts in a certain way, assuming that you had everything planned, you already know what to say. But we're talking about the technical part. When you are saying things, when you're rehearsing, how to be more efficient and effective. But now we are kind of going back to before that. How do we plan for rehearsals? And during that episode, I shared something with you that's a sandwich technique. I will be talking about that in a second too. But I think the most important thing when we are planning rehearsals is to understand what are the rehearsal goals. What are we trying to achieve? For a very long time, my rehearsal goals is to improve the ensemble and myself better and better until the day when we have to perform. And I want to make sure that the performance is, if not the best, like as good as we can be for the ensemble and for myself. So I focused very much on improving the musical side of the performance. And I wanted to invite you, if you haven't already, and if you missed it, to listen to my conversation with my friend Tiani Lu in episode number 34. I will also link that in the show notes, don't worry. When she talked about her journey into mindfulness and well-being on the podium and how the pandemic taught her to shift her focus from preparing for a great concert to taking care of everyone's mental health and give them a great musical experience through the course. That was really a life-changing conversation for me, so I wanted to invite you to listen to it if you missed it, and it's episode number 34. But anyways, coming back to our topic today, when we are planning, we need to know what we want to achieve, right? If we know where we are going, then we can see how we can get there, and then we can measure if we are taking steps and actions toward that goal. Say, so if you know you're going from California to New York, you need to go, you're going to New York, or if you're going to Orlando, or if you're going to Canada, Toronto, you need to know where you are going, then you can plan the route going there. You can make a detour. I see from California to Toronto, I want to visit Yellowstone Park, or I want to see this place, I want to go hiking. Then you can plan different things, but you need to know where you're going first. So what are our rehearsal goals? My rehearsal goals now has been, you know, it was to prepare for a great performance for many, many years, maybe 10 or more years. And then because of the inspiration of Tiani, I started to consider that I now see my rehearsals being a journey to become a better musician at the end of the rehearsal compared to the beginning, while taking care of people's mental health, including myself. So take that psychological side into consideration. But I want this to be a great musical journey. So at the end of the rehearsal, something needs to be better than the beginning. Either that a messy passage has been cleared, or that my players, my musicians have a better understanding about a certain thing that I was asking, even though if they can't do it yet, they understand where we are going, we have better mutual understandings. Or if the music sucks today, but we felt united, we mentally understood why we're here to win this, that's also an achievement. But to do that, we need to be very clear of what am I doing here? And then you can see how we are getting there, right? What am I doing? Why am I doing it? And then we can talk about it. So the rehearsal goals, now when we're talking about philosophically, to have things better, but on a very practical side, the rehearsal goals can be very straightforward to, okay, this symphony, we haven't played it once yet. We've been rehearsing little things. The goal today is to play through the entire program once. Or the second movement of this piece had been really challenging for the musicians. I want to spend the majority of the time today to really clear things up. That's the goal. That's kind of the short-term goal. The long-term goal, I mentioned sandwich techniques. So throughout the course, I want to make sure that I am switching between bigger pictures and small things. Before the end of the rehearsal cycle, like concert cycle, you know, like how many rehearsals leading up to a performance, I want to make sure at some point, probably a little more than halfway through, I'm going to play through a third and things to make sure that my players, my musicians can put things into the bigger picture and understand what we've been doing. So usually what I do is at the beginning of the concert cycle, I will play through things, not always the entire program. So say I have four pieces. I might play through piece number one and start rehearsing it, and then play through piece number two a little bit. And then the next one, I play through piece number two and rehearse a little bit and go through piece number three and four, maybe. Or I've seen conductors always play through the entire program on the first rehearsal, even if it's like, you know, like crappy or it's falling apart, but then they wanted to give everybody an idea of where we're going at the end. and then also get a better judgment on, okay, this one is really pace number two. It's surprisingly really difficult for my players, so I need to adjust my planning and spend more time on it. So it's a little different for everyone, but usually at the beginning, I want to see what I'm getting. So plan A is maybe to play through everything on the first or the first two rehearsals to get an idea of what I'm getting, then plan things ahead of time. Or sometimes when I don't have so many rehearsals, I would do plan B. So I would play through a piece if it's short and then start rehearsing right away, or kind of stop and go, play through a big chunk of the music, maybe say 5 minutes, and then do really quick adjustment. Say, okay, this tempo is not right. Let's make sure and you have the right impression of this piece. This transition is not right. Let's fix it and then move on. So don't go into very details at the very beginning, and then plan ahead. At some point, usually 2-3 rehearsals before the final dress, I want to play through at least some of the pieces to see where is still problematic, where are we still falling apart, what is still challenging for my players, and then use the last 2 or 3 rehearsals to fix them until the end of the cycle. So just that's kind of some of my long-term planning. So the sandwich technique is big, small, big. So I start something big and larger, playing through things a little more often, and I'm going to small details, and then play through it again to look at the big picture and then fix the final things. Another thing to consider when we are talking about, you know, like the long-term goals over this concert cycle is how much does your player retain between rehearsals? What's your rehearsal interval? For a lot of the community ensembles, you know, like the church choir, the community band or orchestra, or even schools, they meet once a week. So a lot of times what you have rehearsed will be lost in this busy week when your players are doing other things. So be prepared and don't be discouraged to come back and revisit some of the problems, because over time, even though you only see them once a week, they still get better. You know, like if they are just 0.1% better every time, by rehearsal 16, if you have like a long-term rehearsal cycle, or, you know, even by rehearsal number 5, it would get better than rehearsal 1. So that's about kind of what my long-term thinkings are. And I used to plan out the entire rehearsal cycle, because when I was a student, I had really, really limited rehearsal time given to my teacher. You know, when the teacher allows you to conduct one piece on a concert or even half of the program, you're still kind of always sharing with others. But even if you're not sharing with others, rehearsal time is precious, right? We know that. It's really hard for people to get together to rehearse something together. So we want to make sure that we're focusing on things that can be solved individually. That's something I'll be talking about more in the second half when I'm speaking about what we rehearse, what we actually correct, and how we fix them in the second part. But in our planning, I used to really write down what I want to do, what I want to achieve each single rehearsal, and I plan them down to minutes. So I say, okay, I have only 3 rehearsals. That's a total of how many minutes? And I have so many minutes of music. Say I have 40 minutes of music, but I have 120 minutes rehearsal times 3. So I want to make sure that in the course of these 3 rehearsals, everything is worked out. So I would say, okay, I want a piece. The first piece, 20 minutes. The second piece, 30 minutes. The next one, okay, for this rehearsal, I really need to rehearse this thing. For next rehearsal, I really need to run through. And I stick to my plans religiously because I have very, very limited time, I thought. And I only get those players for just a little bit. So I want to make sure everything is planned ahead. And I'm really, really following, because the plan was, you know, really well thought and really carefully planned. And this changed again with my dear teacher, Neil Harome at Eastman. So I during my second year of DMA study, I had to jump in to conduct Prokofiev's second violin concerto with a competition winner, with a second orchestra. It's called Essel Eastman School Symphony Orchestra. The scheduled student conductor wasn't me, it was someone else, and I forgot why. I think he had some gigs or something else that he had to leave. So I had to jump in, and we only had 3 or 4 rehearsals to put together this concerto. And it's really hard. Prokofiev is really, really hard. Also, that's the second younger orchestra. So we were really struggling. So when I was tasked this thing, I had a plan. I knew it would be challenging, but I knew, okay, so the first rehearsal, I'm going to play through the first 2 movements because the movement, I know one of the movements would be really hard, but I need to play it through. And then depending on how much time I have, I will do a little rehearsal. And then the next time when I rehearse, I will play through the third movement and then go back and rehearse. So every movement has been touched. And with the third one, we are going to work really hard on details. And with the last one, we are going to play through it again so I can put not falling apart performance together. So I had a plan and I went into rehearsal. And my rehearsal goal for that particular one was to play through the movement. And I wasn't getting there. It was too difficult for my musicians. Of course, they probably didn't look at the music ahead of time, but it was really challenging for the ensemble. So even if they're counting right because of how the music was written, it's structurally very complicated. So they get distracted or in the musical line got interrupted by other sections. So it's hard for them to see where they are in the bigger plan. So, you know, like sometimes you see your own parts, you're coming in beat 1-4-2-5, 1-4-2-5, but then you're really locking in with someone else's. So anyways, I come into the rehearsal with a goal that for this particular rehearsal, my goal is to play it through. So everybody get an idea of how this music is like. But I wasn't getting there. We had to stop and stop and stop a lot. But I was pushing it. I didn't rehearse. I didn't want to spend time rehearsing and actually teaching them how to get better. I just want to play it through. Then my teacher, Professor Barone, stopped me. He's like, it's not good. You can't let go like this. And I say, but I need to play it through because we don't have time. I told him, if we don't play it through, we are losing too much time. And then by the time of the performance, we might have never performed, like played the third movement once if we are stopping to fix things. And he only looked at me and say, I was on the podium. And he only say, no, don't let go. Make it better. You can't let them leave the rehearsal with the music like this. And he was really nice. He didn't say more, but he asked me to rehearse. So I did. And he didn't lecture or teach me in front of the ensemble. I know some other teachers would do. But we talked after that rehearsal. I was trying to justify my choice with him. I say, okay, I know it was not good. It wasn't me not listening or I couldn't hear it. And he said, yeah, I know. I know you heard it, but I didn't agree with you letting go. I say, but I had a plan. We have to do it. Otherwise, we are screwed. And then he looked at me. He said, yeah, it's good to have a plan, but you have to see what you're getting. You can't set a practice and expectation and letting your musicians know you are going to let go when things are not good. They are going to get it. They are going to be okay with not being good enough or not being great at all because you are allowing it. You can't set an example of leaving the rehearsal when things are not working. And you don't even try to fix it. You are just letting go. You can't. I didn't really understand what he meant until many, many years later because I am very stubborn and I felt what I was doing was right for me because otherwise I can't seem to find another way of planning my rehearsals. And if I'm not achieving my rehearsal goals, I get really nervous and anxious because I knew I won't have enough time. And then he was like, if we don't play through a certain thing, it's okay. But whatever they played, they have to do it well. I didn't really understand what that means until many, many years later, that after I've been working for years, I've been doing rehearsals a lot. And then one day I realized what he was trying to teach me. Yes, I understood on the surface level that, yes, we can't set an example of always letting go or telling your ensembles, it's okay not to be great, we're going to let go. That I understood. But later on, I really realized one day that it's much more important that everything you do is done well than doing things just to plow through and have an idea, because even so, you're having a wrong idea. You know, if he didn't stop me that day during the rehearsal and I managed to play through the Prokofiev violin concerto, they are going to get a wrong idea about the piece because I was stopping so much. I'm not giving them the right impression of how this style was, what tempo was, because I was obviously getting a slower tempo. So that wasn't worth it, giving them an impression or an understanding of how I thought I was, telling them how this piece should go. No, I wasn't achieving that at all. So I think the most important thing I learned about planning for rehearsal is to have a plan, to have 10 plans, to have 20 plans, but always be flexible. When plan A is not working, go to your plan B or C or D, E, F. Do whatever you need, but really, really work on things to make things better. And no matter what rehearsal goals that you set for yourself, remember, don't get frustrated, because, you know, like, human beings, learning is up and down, up and down. There are good rehearsals and bad rehearsals. But if you're not achieving your rehearsal goals right away, saying, okay, I come to rehearsal today thinking that I'm going to rehearse the second movement well, and then you get there and realize, oh, your principal oboist who plays huge solo in the second movement has been sick and is not in rehearsal. They go, okay, what am I going to do? No, it's okay. You can still rehearse the second movement. And when everybody learns it well, it lifts up the ensemble. That's also one thing that I learned later. All right, that's a little about how I plan rehearsal in the long term and then also in the short term. The second part that I'm going to talk to you is, so what do we rehearse? How do we fix things when we are in rehearsal? Now you have a plan. You know, coming in, you have 2 hours, you are going to do the first piece for 15 minutes, and then the second piece, the majority is to work on the second piece, which has been hard. You know, you have a plan, you come to rehearsals, then what do you do? So now we are going to talk about what we are going to do when we are actually in rehearsal. What do we rehearse? During my master's study at CCM with Professor Mark Kisten, he always say you start with the basics: pitch, rhythm, articulation. You start with pitch and rhythm and then go to articulation. You define the articulation. But now I've been working for quite a while. I think it really depends on 2 things. 1, what kind of ensemble you're working with. And 2, what's your rehearsal goal? And the second thing ties to another really practical consideration, which is how much rehearsal time and how many rehearsals you have. Because a lot of times when you are working with professional ensembles, you might have less rehearsal time than the actual amount of music, you know, especially with pops or holiday concerts, educational concerts with professional orchestras. You might have 1 rehearsal 50 minutes for about maybe even 50 to 70 minutes of music, or, you know, like, sometimes it's just 50 minutes rehearsal for 50 minutes of music, which doesn't give you rehearsal time at all. You can only play through it, and you don't have time to come back and fix things. Oh, so that reminds me of one thing that I forgot to mention for the first part of today's episode about planning for rehearsals. When I'm planning each individual rehearsal down to a minute, I like to give myself at least 2 to 2.5 times of time to rehearse that much of music. What does that mean? That means for a 10-minute music, no matter it's a 10-minute piece or for a chunk that is about 10 minutes long, I want to have at least 25 minutes to rehearse it. That gives me enough time to play through or play and stop and then do some work. Not that detailed. Sometimes like when I go into every single detail, I lose the big picture and then like kind of I wear myself and the players like it's not very engaging what I'm doing. So I want to balance it a little bit. Of course, we want to make sure that we fix as many things as possible. But that's usually what my guideline is. If it's something that I knew is challenging, it's really hard, or it's being a problem, ongoing problem that I want to fix it today. I don't want it to be ongoing problems anymore. I will leave for say 10 minutes. I will probably leave 35 minutes for that. But usually, you know, for a 2-hour rehearsal or, you know, 3-hour rehearsal with a break, we really only have about from 120 to 150 minutes of rehearsal. And how to break that would be also a challenge. And in episode number 19, I talk about the sandwich technique also for single rehearsals. You know, we go from big, small, and big. You play through a little bit, go to details, and then play through something. And also that applies to something that is a little easier, go to something harder, more challenging, and then start with something that is more manageable. So I won't go in more detail about the sandwich technique today. But coming back to what we rehearse. So I was saying, now I think rehearsal priority or what do we say really depends on how many rehearsals you have, how much time, and what type of ensemble that you're working with. If I were working with a professional ensemble or if I'm under such a time pressure, I have 45 minutes and need to go through 10 different pieces. I go after tempo, transitions, and style. That's the most important thing that a conductor should shape, in my opinion. I also learned it from Professor Johannes Schleffley. She is the head of conductor studies at, I think, Glatz, or he teaches in Vienna, but he's a famous teacher in Europe as well. I attended the workshop that he taught before pandemic, and he said something that no one had said in that way. He said, you know, the only one thing a conductor can influence is tempo. You can talk about, you know, style. You can talk about rehearsal. You can talk about a lot of other things. You can talk about the philosophy of, you know, how to play Brahms or Mahler and that. But really, a lot of what we do is trying to influence the musician's choices. You know, you rehearse the choir and then you help them to sing high notes better or feel a little more ease with leaps, but it's really up to them to decide how they're going to produce that sound, except that tempo is one thing that a conductor can decide, can show, and to influence. That's also something that is critical when you're working with professional ensembles, because supposedly they can work out, or they should work out, learning the right notes, playing the right pitches at the right time, playing the right rhythm. And what they need to know is how fast or slow you want things, and then balance how you kind of coordinate the entire ensemble. So I start when I have very limited time, or when I'm working with professional ensembles, I go after tempo, transition, style, and then balance. Balance is something that can be subtle or obvious, you know, like when it's so obvious, you can correct it really quickly. When it's too subtle, you can tell right away. I usually leave it and then come back if I have time. Or that's something you can also do with your gesture. You know, like at times during rehearsal, if you want a little more harp, just look at your harpist and invite them to play a little more. You can always shush your violins or gesture your low brass. That's no problem. So tempo, transitions, make sure that you are comfortable with the transition and your players understand what you're going after with the transition, and then unify the style. What kind of sound you are going after? What kind of ways? And usually with professional musicians, they can get it pretty quickly as long as you have a clear idea and address it early on. So you don't let them play in their own ways for 5 rehearsals. And then, you know, the one before the concert, you say, oh, by the way, we've been playing this chord too short. That played it a little longer. That's a little too late. You know, they already have the muscle memory and how their opinions of those musical pieces had been formed already. So I want to establish those early on. If I were working with a community ensemble or student ensemble, I go after pitch, rhythm, articulation first with articulation and style. For students, it's sometimes harder to understand that they should play different things differently. It sounds funny, right? Because, you know, like when we were little, we learned, okay, when you see forte, you play louder. And that's the way you play louder. When you see a certain markings, you play a certain way. But a Mozart forte should be performed differently from a Strauss forte, right? Or a Stravinsky forte, or a Brahms forte, or a Mahler forte. Or when you don't have dynamic markings, when you are in the Renaissance, if you sing the a cappella things, you have to listen more. You have to produce a different sound. Are you going after straight tones or with more vibrato in your voice? Are you going after clean cut classical style, or are you using more bowl for your Haydn, for example? That's something I like to influence my musicians early on. So even if they can't do it yet for habitual reason, you know, they haven't been asked to play like that, or technically they can't do it yet, they know, they have an idea of where you're going. They know what the end goal is. And also for non-professional musicians, sometimes they don't correct themselves or they don't catch themselves when they make mistakes with wrong note or wrong rhythm. So I do that much, much early on. Usually with the amateur groups, I have more rehearsals. So I would establish the tempo thing much later, because we can always start things a little slower and then make it a little faster, a little faster, a little faster, kind of proportional wise. So this is kind of what I wanted to share with you. What do I rehearse when I'm getting there for professional orchestras, ensembles, or when I'm running out of time, I go after tempo, transition, and style, then balance. With amateur students or community ensembles, I start with the basics, pitch, rhythm, articulation, and style. And after, I would go after from, you know, tempo. So that's kind of what I rehearse. What do I rehearse? And that should always be tied to the first part. What's your rehearsal goal? What's your single rehearsal goal for this particular rehearsal? What's your overarching rehearsal goals throughout the rehearsal cycle? Sometimes I like to start with the faster movement or the faster music of the program. I like to drill on them a little more at the beginning of the concert cycle. Then after they learn the notes, they learn those techniques, then I start putting in the more lyrical part, the slower music, to balance it out. But I like to get the most technical part early on in a rehearsal cycle. But that's kind of a little idea of how I plan and what I do in rehearsal. And the last part, how do I improve my rehearsal techniques? As I said in the very beginning of our topic today, rehearsal techniques is something that you learn only by doing it and making mistakes. So one, something that is brutally painful but very necessary is to watch your own rehearsal footage. Record every single thing. Record yourself every single time when you're on a podium and take notes. You want to make sure that the camera is set at the back of the ensemble and facing you. So you can tell, one, are you really clear with your verbal comments? Can your player really hear you, or are they constantly asking each other, hey, where are we? What's going on? Where are we starting? Or are they just like, are they really paying attention to you? And two, very often with those recordings, I found things that I didn't hear. Or when I listened to certain things that I thought was terrible in rehearsal was not that bad. So, you know, like because something that was a little more easy to fix, I spent 5 minutes talking about one phrase while actually 7 bars later, there is a big disaster that I missed. So I learned a lot from that too. I would start to hear a lot more other things that I didn't hear in the rehearsal because I was in the moment. And then I took notes on that. So next time when I'm rehearsing again, I will pay more attention to those spots that I missed and also to kind of always also evaluate myself and learn what I should be paying attention to in that way. And then three, that's more like a second point other than watching your own rehearsal, but I think that they are connected. The next thing that you can do to improve your rehearsal technique is to write down how things can be addressed differently. That can be done with watching your own rehearsal footage. So, you know, like I say something this way, but I should have said something differently. But in general, if you are new or if you want to continue improving yourself, I think we should always come up with like a billion of ways of saying different things, you know. Say, if one section is dragging because they have offbeat, it's easy if you just tell them, hey, we are behind, play a little faster. That's one way of saying it. Or I have teachers telling me, you should tell them to play at the front of the beat. That confuses some young players, of course. Or just tell them to play a little bit ahead. Or you could tell them, play with my beat, to play with my baton. Or you can tell them to listen to the cellos who have the downbeat and play closer. Like, or you can tell them, feel that you are chasing the violins. So you are going to try to rush the violins with your offbeat. Then we are more aligned. So you say, I was just describing a situation where the section playing offbeat kept getting behind. There are a lot of different ways to tell them. And depending on your musicians, how, and also depending on the music, it can be addressed differently and they will receive it differently. And you have to kind of, it's experience. You have to see how they receive it and find what's working. So we talked about one, watch your own rehearsal footage and take notes. And then two, write down or think of different ways of addressing the issue. And three is the most important thing is go to rehearsals. My friend Talia Ilan in episode number 8, when we discussed about finding good teachers for yourself, also talked about like how she had been going to rehearsals since she was little, since she was a student. And that's also something that you can really learn from others. And going to rehearsals will only be useful if you already know the music. So that's also a way of expanding your repertoire. You know, that's also a great way because you can see how other people practically prepare a piece from inside out instead of just going to concert or watching recordings, then you're only seeing the final product. That's a great way of learning, oh, this passage could be messy or that part can be challenging even for professional ensemble and how this conductor solves this problem. That's a great way. Going to rehearsals and watch others rehearse will also help your repertoire expansion and also improve your rehearsal techniques. And when you're reaching out to people, my conversation with my friend Elizabeth Askren, when she talks about how to approach others, she talked about great things, how you cold email someone, how you address to others instead of just telling your need. Because, you know, like those maestros or the admin of the organization will get thousands of email pitching for ideas. And then you want to make sure that you are really researching, doing your homework before you reach out. Because, you know, there's only one chance of making your first impression, right? And that conversation was episode number 15, and I'll link it in the show notes as well. So my conversation with Talia Ilan was episode number 8, and with Elizabeth Askren when she talks about networking skills is in episode number 15. So coming back to wrap up, a good rehearsal technique will come from good score study, for sure. You need to have good knowledge and deep understanding of the music so you can plan ahead of time. You know what would be challenging, how much time you can predict or estimate that your ensemble would need. And when you're in the spot, because you know the score deeply, you know how this should go, so you can tell what was not right. Either that's a mistake, or that's not the right style, or that's something. That's also an option of interpreting this piece, but it's different from your view. So improving your rehearsal techniques should really come back to your score study. And that's something we'll talk about later in this month. But that's just to wrap up. And I hope you are finding some useful information in this episode and also enjoying this summer mini-series. I will see you again next time, next week, at the same time, same place. Bye for now and take care.